Hi, family. I'm Joe Maddie.
Hey, Joe.
And I'd like to thank the Program Committee of CPRC and A19 for allowing me the opportunity to share my experience, strength, and hope. And usually when I'm asked to lead meetings, I, for the benefit of the newcomer, not thinking that I am the basic tech, so it works how and why guru, I tell them that I'm up here because I need more help than anybody else in the room. I need to also share with you that I was not the original person asked to share with Sharon on this particular topic, but they asked me at about 10 minutes to 4 if I would be willing to share this workshop. And then when they said spiritual manipulation, I took umbrage with that topic. How dare you ask me to share on something so frivolous and mean-spirited and certainly foreign to my information. Spiritual manipulation. You would ask me to do that? Don't you want to give me something like the God-centered creature? The heaven-bound angel returning home? Why? But you know, I was sitting there thinking as Sharon was sharing, and she is special in my life. I met Sharon when I was in treatment at Salvation Army, and she was one of the women who used to come to bring meetings into a facility for men. And she used to let them brothers have it, coming and going. And one night I remember this, and I'm going to share this, Sharon, so I don't have no manipulation. Sharon was leading a meeting, and you know how you are when you first get here. You know everything. And she was sharing on a topic, and I felt that I had something that was pertinent and needed to be shared, and I raised my hand repeatedly, and she ignored me just as repeatedly as I raised my hand. But I got her in the end, because when she got outside, her car wouldn't start, and I was the only one with jumper cables. But you know, as God would have it, and I'm glad God is in charge, as God would have it, later, Sharon was the vice chair of the convention committee, and I had the opportunity to be the chair of hotels and hospitality, and I see my very able co-chair sitting back there. As a matter of fact, the other vice chair for that committee is here. And man, we had a time. We had a time. We were the craziest bunch of addicts ever assembled, but you know, Sharon was so supportive of hotels and hospitality, and she really, well, we had dinner every time we met. That's why she was there, though. But she was supportive, you know, and we got through this thing, and we had a great convention. And that's why whenever I'm asked to be of service, I can only say yes. But talking about spiritual manipulation, you know, I have to go back and tell you that as a child, I was raised in an atmosphere that was not conducive to spiritual well-being. I happened to be the child of not only alcoholic parents, but indeed, I believe that alcohol is a drug, so I'm a child of addicts. And one of the addicts happened to be mentally ill in conjunction with the alcoholism. You know, and they tell us that when we come here, there are varying degrees of difficulty in this disease, and there are varying rates of recovery. And I need you to know that I was not birthed into a religious family, but because my mother died during my infancy, literally, and my father was incapacitated and regarded as too volatile and too disabled to care for his children, we were placed in the foster care system. And as a result of being placed in that system, it was required that we were to be introduced to church. And anybody working in the social work field, you need to be real careful introducing children to religion. Because we started going to this church, and they literally did backflips up and down the aisle, and they taught this mean little old God who sat way back up in heaven, and I was sure he was going to strike me down by the time I could really learn to make a mistake. And because I was so afraid of him, I instilled a thought in my mind that I followed right into addiction. You see, I did not try to have any kind of relational interaction or experience with God early on because I was so frightened of him. And then, too, I was told that I was just a little hoodlum and I'd be dead and in hell by the time I was 21. And because they instructed me in that manner, I decided since I was going to hell anyway, I'd raise hell until I got there. And that set the tone for my rebellion. But I need to also tell you that because I didn't have a mother and I was placed in the care of strangers, I'm going to share a little funny thing that happened real early on in that foster care thing. You see, we came out of abject poverty. We had old rough wooden floors and, you know, it was a mess. We had an old potbelly stove in the house. It was cold as hell in there. The wind blew. It came right on through the house. And when they moved us into this foster care thing, the first house they put me in temporarily, these people had carpet. Well, I'd never walked on carpet before. And I remember getting up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom. And when I put my feet on the floor and stepped on that carpet, I thought to myself, the only thing I could think according to my information, why do these people have grass on the floor? And that lets you know where my thinking was, okay? And that was the best information I had to work with, and that's what I worked with, but that's where I was spiritually too, because I'd never really been nurtured in matters spiritual. And that is an essential part of the parenting child experience. And because no one had taken the opportunity and no one had shared that information, but I got to tell you that you have to have it in order to share it. And no one had it that was willing to share it, and they tried to bring it in by taking me into church, and they just scared me to death with that. And religion pushed me further away from developing a relational interaction with God than it did in having one. So that by the time I was probably 8 or 9 years old, you know what, I had already formed my thought processes about God. And the only thing that I would relate to you if you mentioned God to me was, I don't play with God. And all through my active addiction, whenever the subject of God came up, I don't play with God. And there would be no more discussion. End of discussion. If you wanted to pursue it, you would be alone in doing so. I had to go. But you know, y'all, I had problems. And I was in a lot of pain, obviously. And you know, as a result of that pain, I started to seek escape. And in trying to seek escape, I found sleep. And because I found sleep, I wet the bed. And because I wet the bed, they tried to whip it out of me or whip the idea into me that I was not supposed to wet the bed. It didn't work. And when the pain of that got great enough, the spiritual manipulation that became readily apparent and the only idea that I could conjure up was to run away from the pain. That was the only manipulation I knew at the time. But the problem with that was, see, and I never considered that running away required a destination. I never considered that running away might be a little bit wiser if you had someone to run to. But when you're running away to nowhere and to nobody, it's real dangerous where you may wind up. And for me, it wound up in being molested, which threw me into an even darker and deeper abyss. And I cannot stand here today and tell you that I developed some spiritual response to this painful psychological and emotional dilemma in which I found myself. All that came out of that for me was hurt, anger, fear, and resentment. And then when I got around the rest of you spiritless bastards, and you started to define me for me, and I became willing to wear whatever label you gave me, I distanced myself even further from the hope of having some spirituality, from the hope of finding a relationship with God. I sunk into myself. And you and I have both been told and know, and if you haven't been told and don't know this, I'm going to help you with it today. A person who is consumed in themselves makes a mighty small package. And believe me, the only thing then that I had to work with was whatever I could contrive and conjure in my little mind. And what I thought of first and foremost was, I hurt, somebody else needs to hurt. And we know that hurt people hurt people. So what I set out on was a godless path to do whatever I thought, not to make myself feel better. I didn't want to feel better. I just wanted somebody to hurt as damn bad as I did. And because I'd already learned to run away to nothing, I didn't care what you thought about me anymore. I just wanted your ass to hurt. And what I did was took sex to the level of recreation. I wasn't interested in procreation. Make what? If I was going to create something, it was going to be your damn misery. And I can't think of a more empty, void, vacuum spiritually to be than just out to hurt somebody because I hurt. And you know, all the while, I kept pushing the idea of a God further and further away. I had no clue even that God could be identified and then become attractive. But what happened in the course, there was a yearning inside me for something to fill the void. The first drug I tried was alcohol, but I was not a good alcoholic. I drank it, yes, but I would pour it down and you'd wear it. I did manage to get enough M's for it to make me feel different. But see, I was by now trying to be attractive to you. And I didn't want you attracted to me spiritually. I didn't know nothing about that. I wanted to get closer to you physically. And you know what? I did what you did too, because I had no identity of my own. I mimicked everything you did. If you dressed well, I dressed well. Wherever you shopped, I shopped. Whatever you wore, I wore. Some of it hurt like hell, you know? But I wore it because y'all was wearing it. I was seeking to become a part of. I wanted to fit in. I wanted to look like. And I thought if I fit it in, if I looked like, if I hang out at the right places, if I did all the dances right, and I would get on the dance floor, baby, and it was on. Woo! It was time to go. You know, that was my personal show. But I did all of these things thinking that externally I could create an identity, but all the while inside the vacuum was still left unfulfilled. And I didn't like that antisociable behavior of alcohol consumption. After all, I couldn't get close to you throwing up, you know, and stinking. Not to mention when the dysentery came. You know, when you're stinking on both ends, nobody wants it. What can they do with you? You're loose everywhere. Y'all know we want something with a grip. When I got drunk, I couldn't get one. But I kept searching. And then one day somebody handed me a joint. It was on. I remember running through the house the first time I ever smoked the stuff with a brown paper bag, pulling it over everybody's head, telling them how ugly they were. And after a while, we just took the hinges off the refrigerator. The truth be told, I don't know if I put them back yet. But you know, it was my gateway to further self-destruction. And it was an instruction of how to get on the fast track to the gates of hell. Because my addiction didn't progress, it took a quantum leap. That opened this little morbid mind to the idea that if you get high, it'll be all right. And that's when I lost control while thinking I just gained it. That's when self-will truly began to run riot. That's when I became disobedient, rebellious, unconscionable, totally lacking in consideration, respect, regard, kindness, and compassion. What I was doing to harm myself was often a disaster to other people, but because I chose to live in that godless vacuum, none of it mattered. But eventually, the pain began to outweigh the pleasure. And after a while, I used the drug. Then the drug used the drug. Then the drug used me. And ultimately, I was just left out of the equation. The drug and the disease was interacting, and I didn't even matter. It didn't work anymore. I even went back and got the original and coupled it with the latter. Vodka and Richardson crack. And none of it worked. And let me tell you, even as sick and as badly as I was suffering, I still was not willing or yet ready to surrender. I am telling you, let me tell you about the unrequited, unparalleled grace of God. God often does for us what we are too ignorant, too weak, and unwilling to do for ourselves. While still trying to die, sitting at the fire barrel, which was my last address in active addiction, 900 M Street Northwest, Alleyside, second crate from the fire barrel. Listen to manipulation. While sitting on my crate one sunny winter morning, with a fresh paint, half paint, now I couldn't afford a paint, a fresh half paint, a Velikoff, a dime rock, somebody's antenna with... with some electrical tape on it and some fresh chore boy. I heard two drunks talking about how they had manipulated Salvation Army and stole plenty of money. And my addict mind said, you never tried that. You need to work that piece. And I contrived the scheme that I was going to go into the Salvation Army. It was going to be 50 cents for them and $3 for me. And I said when I got $3,000, I was going to go to California and start my life all over again. I did not have the information that y'all gave me after I got here that when I got to California, I was going to meet me there. But God, in his infinite wisdom, said, whatever it takes, I've got to save your life because you ain't got sense enough to do it for yourself. And let me tell you, he allowed me to pursue that plan. And when I went to detox, I should have known something was up from where it go. When I got to the detox over behind DC General, Mr. Anley wrote a note and sent me up to, he said, go into the hospital main building, catch the elevator up to the fourth floor. Going upstairs, Sharon. Then he said, ring the bell. It never dawned on my little sick mind that when you're ringing a bell, the door's locked. And he said, they will help you from there. I want you to know he had just given me instructions and directions to the psychological detoxification unit at DC General Hospital, better known as 42 North. When I walked into that unit, y'all, out of a blizzard, and only God will keep a fire barrel burning through a blizzard, I spent my last night alone with God at that fire barrel in a blizzard. And at 9 o'clock in the morning, I was at the door of 42 North, and when they opened that door and let me in, spiritually, DOA, physically ruined, psychologically and emotionally distraught, and literally destroyed. I had nothing in the infrastructure of a human being that was working in its natural order. I was just a remnant of something and somebody. But it was enough left of me that God saw fit to be merciful so that I didn't get what I rightly deserved. And he saw fit to give me grace to extend to me what I couldn't possibly earn. And I want to tell you that for the past 11 years, the greatest challenge has been not to misuse what I've been given. The greatest challenge has been to come to you and to tell you honestly and openly where I am and what I'm going through. It's been to come to you and tell you when I don't have the money to pay my bills. It's been to call you when I'm sick. In December, I was so sick, y'all, that I couldn't even put my own pants on. But I had faithfully and ignorantly been obeying the instructions that doctors were giving me, and they were giving me medication that was killing me. But you know what? God, one more time, Say, I got you. I got you. What you got to do, Joe, is remember your basics. Y'all told me when I got here, take a look. And there is a power greater than yourself that is there to help you in your recovery. And then y'all told me that the therapeutic value of one addict helping another, and that help has to be unconditional. That help has to be extended regardless of whether you like them or can't stand their guts. And you said there is a God, and he will come into your understanding if you will simply open your heart, open your mind, seek to be willing. And every time that riot occurs in your life called self-will and it slams the door on your recovery shut, willingness is the key to open it again. You got to be able to say, I don't know what I'm doing, but a simple way has been proving itself over and over again. It doesn't matter whether you're old or young, black or white, rich or poor, gay or straight, from D.C., Maryland, Virginia, New York, California, Hawaii, or Argentina, the same thing works. And if it's worked for one addict, it will work for another. But ain't none of it gonna work until I get out of the way and stop being part of the problem and be willing to be part of the solution. I'm going to leave you with this. If you seem to have endless difficulties in countless numbers of relationships, and I'm not just talking about your intimate relationships. I'm not talking about those things, just those things that begin with friendships and wind up on battleships. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about them all, including your relational interaction with God. Instead of pulling out your blame thrower and casting the light on God and everybody else, I want you to stop just for a moment and ask, who's the common denominator in all these relationships? Then the next question that will become readily apparent is, what part do I play in it? Thanks for letting me share.